Welcome to the AC Podcast. My name is Troy, and I am your host for today's episode. REST, an event that often eludes the entrepreneur, parents, and ministry leaders, among many others. As we observe the remainder of the Holy Week on Good Friday and Easter, a person should naturally be reflecting on the finished work of the cross. However, the scriptures outline that there's still much work to be done for the sake of the gospel, while also instructing us to find rest in God. So what is the true Sabbath, and how should it be observed? Join Troy and Steve on this week's episode of the AC Podcast to hear our thoughts. Before we get into the episode, just a quick reminder, for those of you that were at the Can I Trust the Bible conference and got an opportunity to see our latest video series, or at least a snippet of it, that video resource is available today. Simply head to bible.apologeticscanada.com, sign up, and we will get this free resource in your hands. That's right, completely free. Just need to sign up and we'll get it to you. That's all from me. Let's get into the podcast. Hey, listeners, welcome to the AC Podcast. My name is Troy, and I'm here today with my main man, Steve. The musical dynamic duo are here together this fine, fine day. How you doing, sir?
Doing good. Good to be with you again, Troy.
Yeah, we don't get tons of opportunity to just have the two of us on here, let alone two podcast hosts at all. So I always look forward to it because it always shifts the dynamic of how conversations go and that kind of thing. So, but Steve, I gotta know, because maybe some of our listeners don't fully understand your musical prowess. But
oh dear!
But yeah. I would love to know, what is your favorite musical group that you grew up on, or person that you grew up on, and who are you currently listening to? What's in your playlist?
Oh dear. So one comment that my wife always makes whenever I listen to something like a playlist that I put together, she always comments on how eclectic it is, because I'll listen to just about everything.
I feel that.
Yeah. So if there is one particular band, it's more of a genre that I grew up with, really. I think I'm 80s kid, so there was a lot of, you know, Van Halen and Bon Jovi, those guys. You know, the 80s was when metal was mainstream, right? So I grew up on those guys. And then there was a season of, you know, especially as I kind of got to know my Protestant evangelical friends, like DC Talk, Newsboys, you know.
From Van Halen to DC Talk is a wonderful job. Yeah.
It was it's a bit of a, and these days, because of the classical education that we're doing with our kids, part of the curriculum involves like music appreciation. And so we've been going to, last year we went through like Baroque and classical. This year we're going through Romantics and like 20th century music. So we've been listening to guys like Tchaikovsky, wow, Debussy, and I think Stravinsky is coming up next. So like I'm trying to kind of wrap my ears around those these days.
Yeah. Wow. That's, that is awesome and intense. See, this is what I'm saying, listeners. Like, some of you might have just been like, oh, I wonder, yeah, maybe he listens to, I don't know, maybe Steve's a Swiftie. We never know.
You never know. You know, one artist that I do like, that I do listen to a lot, is this guy, Noah Gunderson,
okay.
Yeah, he's a singer-songwriter from Washington State. He grew up in a super religious family. And he's got a bit of a rebellious streak in him. His songs are so, I don't know, I find him so human. He sings about a lot of human brokenness, which I appreciate.
Yeah, that's cool. I was going to say, it's always interesting when you start really asking people who they get into, and then trying to match what they listen to with their personality. Because like, if someone were to ask me right now, you know, like, Troy, who's at the top of your playlist right now? Many people would probably just assume it's a rapper because I'm a rapper, but the jig is up. I actually listen to very little hip hop in comparison to the amount that I write or I create. Mm-hmm. Right now I'm listening to this, I think I would call it like Western country. So not just the typical, what you're going to hear on the radio, but like this very, very old style of country. I'm listening to a guy right now named Sturgill Simpson. He has an album called The Battle of Dude and Juanita, and it's this story of it's a story of this a Pawnee maiden, and this and this guy is like this mixed breed I believe it's like indigenous and American. And he just, and it's just the way he unpacks the stories. And like the songs are all stories about this couple and how they've come together. It's so good, but you would never expect it. Like you put it on and the first thing you hear is and it's, but I'm also one of those people that when I'm in a creative space, my whole mind gets wrapped around a concept that I'm fully immersed in. Sometimes my style changes depending. I don't have a pair of cow boots on the way, but as you can see behind me, see behind me for those
the
who are cacti. Watching. Yeah.
That's awesome. I think there is something to be said about creative work that can be at times a little bit laborious, right? Sometimes there is that almost like, I mean, it's a bit of a crass way to put it, almost this kind of creative constipation kind of thing. You're trying to, you know, artificially trying to squeeze something out.
Yeah.
But then there are moments like, as you know, songwriters know this all too well, right? There are those songs that come together in 15 minutes.
Yeah, exactly.
And those are the best ones. And then what you can do is those songs, especially those things that come together in 15 minutes, those are the ones that really kind of you can find delight in, joy in. You could almost say that you could rest in it.
100%. Right? Yeah. And that's a beautiful segue into our conversation today, because as a believer, let alone just an artist, there's these seasons where we can get so wrapped up in what we're doing that we don't actually take time to pause and, you know, have the kind of, and really rest in where God has us and also what he has called us to. And so our conversation today is titled Jesus is Coming, Look Busy, right? Mm-hmm. We want to talk about this theology of rest. What does it mean to rest in God? And I mean, I think I can speak for anyone who's been in church ministry for any number of years and serving, especially us in our organization. You know, people may ask all the time, like, how you guys doing? And I've personally changed my language from merely busy to active, because I found that busy has a very negative connotation that comes with it, right? You, when someone says, oh, you're probably busy, it's like, wait a minute. Busy doesn't mean that I intentionally don't have time for you. Busy in this framework really just means I have something that has filled that time slot that I have to put priority to. I believe a person absolutely can be busy, but what about yourself, Steve? Like, how have you looked at this conversation of busy in your own life?
Yeah. You know, that's a great question to lead into this. Maybe I'll start by sharing a little bit about the way I grew up. Mm-hmm. So for those of you who didn't know, I grew up in South Korea. My family moved to Canada in the early 90s. Now, anybody who knows any history, like modern history of Korea, understands that, you know, we went through that Japanese colonial period in the early 20th century, and then mid-century in 1950 to 1953, the Korean War, right? So my dad was 4 years old when the Korean War broke out. My grandparents, of course, they lived through part of that Japanese colonial period and through the war when everything was destroyed. Like after the Korean War, all of the infrastructure got destroyed. Korea, South Korea, was one of the poorest countries in the world. And so they had to build everything back up from scratch. Like I remember my grandma telling me stories of how she used to make soap, because you couldn't, there was no store to go buy soap at, so she had to make it from scratch. Mm. You know, those kinds of things. And so, and in the 70s, and the especially in the 70s and 80s, the economy started really picking back up. And one of the reasons it could do that was because, if you know Koreans, like, they're hardworking people. Mm. And I would like to say almost to a fault. And so I grew up with this constant pressure to study and to go to a good university and get a good job. So for a long time, I told myself that I wanted to be a doctor, because that's a good thing to be, you know, coming from an Asian family, they expect you to be a doctor or a lawyer or an engineer or, you know, that they might say, at least be an accountant, right? You know, those kinds of things. That's the stereotype anyway. So I kind of grew up in that environment where sleeping in was frowned upon. Just not doing anything was frowned upon. So there was a lot of that. But then we moved to Canada. So there was less of that pressure to always be on top of things. But what I, in retrospect now, what I do see is this kind of mentality of work hard, play hard.
Yeah, that's right.
As if there's nothing else other than those two, working hard and playing hard.
Yeah.
Right? So rest, how does rest fit into that, right? That's something I've been kind of thinking about for some time now.
Yeah. You know, I think it would be good to even preface, just I think when we look at one of the first examples of rest, and I'd love to jump into this conversation a little bit with Genesis 2 verse 2 and 3, right? Where we see by the seventh day, God had finished the work he had been doing. So on the seventh day, he rested from all his work. Then God blessed the seventh day and made it holy because on it, he rested from all the work of creating that he had done. Now I've, for many of years, naturally have looked at, okay, this day that the Lord rested on, you know, we've now gone and called the Sabbath, the seventh day. And we look at, even look at the way our work week has been relatively designed, you know. In the age of entrepreneurs, I think you see a lot more people working straight through the weekend. You know, you run your own business, you got to work straight through. How have you implemented what we're seeing as, or what we've been taught as, is the Sabbath day? Have you seen it more observed as one specific day where you do nothing, or have you seen it as a rotating day depending on what your week looks like?
I could say a couple things with respect to, is it a set day or is it a... I think there is something to be said about having the discipline of rest. Mm. And discipline, a big part of forming this discipline is, it's a habit formation.
Yeah.
Right? And so, again, for those of you who don't know my background very well, currently I'm attending an Anglican church. I grew up Roman Catholic. Currently, I'm attending an Anglican church. So we do a lot of liturgy. And one of the good things about liturgy is that you repeat the same things over and over again, week after week. And what it does is it shapes you, it forms you, it gives you a language of prayer. Those are all the good things of liturgy that I've really come to appreciate, especially in the last couple of years. And in the same way, I think there is something to be said about setting one day aside and keeping it regularly over and over again. So for us and our family, that's Saturday, where Saturday is kind of the day that we set aside to be with family. We don't like to schedule things in for that day. And I mean, there are times when, as a family, we go see another family and spend time together in community that way. Mm-hmm. But it is a day that we have set aside. I try not to take on too many speaking engagements on Saturday, those kinds of things. Having said that, there are times when it just doesn't work out.
Yeah.
Right. So if I have to go somewhere over the weekend to do speaking engagements, let's say, then we'll try to take another day off. And that's one of the benefits of us, you know, homeschooling, because then we can kind of make our own schedules around that. We're a little bit more flexible that way. But we try to set a day aside, but we're not married to it.
Yeah. Yeah. I can definitely say for our family, maybe it's an interesting scenario, and it's something that we're Jasmine and I are actively conversing about and talking about, because the nature of what we do, you know, we're very active in our church in regards to the different ministries that we're involved in. And then also, you know, working with AC full time, Monday to Friday. And then sometimes that spills into the weekend, depending on if you come to a conference, like Can I Trust the Bible, which the recordings are available online, but,
noise,
right. You like that plug. But then, you know, I finish my work week and then it's Saturday rehearsal. Then it's Sunday service. And I've constantly wrestled with understanding rest. And I think that's in a lot of ways why this conversation is really important, because as much as I do recognize that it is important to have a very specific day, I also understand that there is a grace that I believe that that the Lord has given us that says rest is can just as much be a day as it can be a posture. Because I think there is an aspect of things where we can be caught striving, you know, yeah. and in your striving, right, you could take a day off and not be restful and not actually be resting, right? It doesn't Absolutely. Mean that you're sitting there doing nothing. And so I was like, okay, God, well, what does rest really look like to you? Because I want to be very intentional with every day that I spend with you. And mm-hmm. and I think that, and maybe there's people that are listening and probably resonate with this a little bit, because
totally,
it can actually be really challenging to, based on the lifestyle that we have, based on the schedule that you have, to truly say, oh, I'm going to take this full day off and do absolutely nothing. Well, I'm like, mm-hmm. I got kids. So when if I do have a full day off, I can guarantee it is not restful in the sense of doing nothing, but I am with my family and we may be running around all day doing errands and that kind of thing.
I think this is where, you know, what a great kind of a description of the predicament that we're in, right? In our cultural moment where it's like, yeah, we want to, especially for Christians, we want to take a day off, but we don't know how to do it and we don't know what it looks like. And we get into all kinds of, I think part of the problem is that we have this idea that Sabbath or whatever, taking a day off, is about not doing things, not working or not doing things. Maybe there's a little bit more than that. So biblically, if you put it into the biblical context, I think, like you mentioned, I thought that was very appropriate that you brought up Genesis 2:2, where God rested on the seventh day from all his work that he had done. All right. Of course, the question is raised, well, why does God need to rest? Does that mean, right? And that word, the rested, those of you who studied Hebrew will know that this word, same word for rest, also means ceasing. And I think that's partly where we get kind of caught up. Okay, Sabbath is about not doing things. But especially in the human context, we were supposed to be in this place of rest in the Garden of Eden. And the interesting thing is, God actually, when God created Adam, he created the garden first, and then he created Adam and put him there to work it.
Yeah.
But what does come along is in Genesis chapter 3, verses 17 to 19. Of course, Genesis 3, the fall of humankind, right? Mm-hmm. You see God confronting Adam and says, cursed is the ground because of you. In pain you shall eat of it all the days of your life. Thorns and thistles it shall bring forth for you, and you shall eat the plants of the field. By the sweat of your face you shall eat bread till you return to the ground, for out of it you were taken, for you are dust, and to dust you shall return.
Yeah.
And so there is that context of futility after the fall, right? There's toil, not just work, but there's toil. And this is burdensome, right? And it's not safe anymore.
Yeah.
Right? That your relationship with God has been broken. Your relationship with other human beings has been broken. And your relationship with creation has been broken.
Yeah.
Now creation is a dangerous place. And there's no peace. There's no safety. And there is futility. It's in that context, you know, God, especially as he makes his covenant with the people of Israel, okay, you know, this on this holy day, on the Sabbath day, do no work.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
So for them, it's a huge deal in that context.
And I think that's really important as we're, you know, we're coming up on, as of the time of this recording, we're coming up on Easter. And, you know, you go and tell someone who's preparing for these Easter services and programs, this is a very, very busy time for churches, right? This is one of the, between Easter and Christmas, statistically, are the highest evangelistic days of the year, right? Yeah. Because those are the two services a year that people will go just because they're in town to visit family, or they'll go to observe it because of for historical reasons, how they grew up. My mom wants me to go with her to her Easter service, and the Good Friday, it's the Good Friday service, and then the Easter Sunday. You know, this is a very, very busy time for those that are running these churches. And I think sometimes when you are, and I say average, not to diminish anyone, but when you are the average churchgoer who's not necessarily serving in your church community, it's very, very easy to look at people who are serving in your church and say, oh, you're serving too much. Oh, you're doing too much. I'm like, well, say that to the disciples in the book of Acts, right? Say that to the original apostles, who every single day of their life was committed to building God's house. And as we're seeing in scripture, you start to realize, much like what you're saying, Steve, you're starting to realize that because of the curse, rest doesn't look the way that it was supposed to. But then through the person of Jesus, through the life and death and resurrection of Jesus, that rest we found in him, right? Mm-hmm. Because to that point, look at how many different instances you see the Pharisees mad at Jesus because he was going to heal on Sabbath, right? And Jesus poses them a question. So if a donkey falls into a hole on Sabbath, knowing, like, culturally, historically, how important that donkey might have been to that one farmer, do we just leave it in the hole to the next day? Or do we pull it out of the hole? Do we rescue it because it's actually going to affect our livelihood if I do not put the effort in today? And it dumbfounded them because they didn't think about it like that. And I think this is why you look at Mark 2:27-28. Then he, Jesus, said to them, the Sabbath was made for man, not man for the Sabbath. So the Son of Man is Lord even of the Sabbath. And so that's got to shift our entire perspective. What we're not saying, though, and feel free to jump in here, Steve. What we're not saying is that now you're never supposed to take a day off. You're never supposed to take a break. Okay, Troy's telling me now I get to grind. Now I get to, see, told you I have to hustle. And put, it's like, no, that's not what we're saying. But there is a mindfulness that a person can have when it comes to their efforts and knowing, okay, I worked 7 days full out of this week and I haven't rested. But I think more it's the mindset of, in my efforts, I need to be looking for time of rest, but I don't need to be so rigid in it.
Yeah. So this is why it's so important to actually wrap our head around, biblically at least, you know, for us Christians, well, I shouldn't say at least, why we need to wrap our head around this concept of rest in biblical terms. And I thought you brought that up beautifully, because that tension between Jesus and the religious leaders, it goes back a little bit farther too. Think about this, right? In Deuteronomy 12:10, 25:19. So pull your Bibles out if you have it, listeners, viewers. Deuteronomy 12:10, Deuteronomy 25:1, 2 Samuel 7:1. So these are all talking about how God, especially Deuteronomy, right? God is going to, this is the book of Deuteronomy, is Moses giving the Israelites the law again before they actually enter into the promised land, right? So if you know the story, Exodus, right? The Israelites come out of the land of Egypt, out of slavery, but of course, you know, they are hardening their hearts. They are grumbling about, they're disobeying the Lord. And so the Lord basically cleans the house. They're like, you're going to wander the desert for 40 years. And when the new generation arises, they are actually prepared to enter into the promised land. And so just before they enter into the promised land, that's where the book of Deuteronomy comes, where Moses is giving them, reminding them of the law one more time. And it actually talks about, and by this time, you know, they've had troubles with Egypt, they've had troubles with Amalek, they've had all kinds of troubles with their enemies, right? And this is where in Deuteronomy 12:10 and 25:19, God talks about how they're going to have rest from their enemies, right? And so there is this idea of, if you're going to have rest, what you need is shalom. Of course, shalom doesn't just mean lack of military conflict. It means much more than that. It means wholeness.
Yeah.
but it certainly is no less than that.
Yeah.
Right. And so then Israelites enter into their promised land, and that's where they find rest.
Yeah.
And this then becomes sort of this picture of salvation that is coming.
Yeah.
And then what you see is, so in this land, as God's covenant people, what they're supposed to be is they're supposed to be, as my Old Testament teacher put it years ago, they were supposed to be wild different from all the nations around them. And one of those things was how they celebrated Sabbath.
Yeah.
Right. From sunset Friday to sunset Saturday, they were to do no work in a world where most were subsistence farmers, right? So if you don't work, you don't eat.
Yeah, exactly.
Right. And so this, and for example, if you look at the history of modern nation of Israel, sometimes there would be wars breaking out during, you know, the Passover season, for example. Mm. Why? Because the enemies know that they're not going to do anything.
Right.
They're supposed to not do anything, right?
Yeah.
So again, this for Israel, then it's an exercise in trust in God,
yeah.
knowing that he's going to provide, that he's going to protect. So so it was not so much about not doing things, but when they cease to do the things that they would normally strive for, they are also exercising their trust in God. And so it was a time.
That's huge.
It was supposed to be a time of rest. Yeah, huge. It was supposed to be a time of restoration, rejuvenation. But what do the leaders, the religious leaders in Jesus' day? They're putting restrictions. They're putting
Good.
To the point where nobody could really live up to it.
Yeah.
Right. Except the religious elites.
Yeah.
And the passage you mentioned in the synopsis, I find that just fascinating because if you read it, there are two things that are contrasted. Here's Jesus coming, healing on the Sabbath, right? And he actually allows his disciples to glean from the field and eat on the Sabbath, which they were not supposed to do because that was considered work.
Yeah.
And so he's butting heads with religious leaders. And so here's Jesus bringing life on the Sabbath.
Yeah.
And what do the religious leaders do? They're plotting to kill Jesus, right? So here's Jesus bringing life. Here's religious leaders bringing death.
Yeah.
And so there's such a contrast.
Yeah. There. That's really well said, Steve, because I think what we're really getting at is this resting God is a faith exercise, truly. Mm-hmm. And just for a brief moment, as we're kind of coming to a close here, I want to speak to the entrepreneur, because my heart goes out to the entrepreneur, to the business owner, to the ministry leader who can sometimes, let's be very, very honest, can go weeks before you get a break, where you've been called to the forefront to lead, to gather, to, you know, business meeting here, event here, and you're listening to this and you're like, man, I just my team's not there yet. If I don't do it, no one will do it, that kind of thing. Resting in God is a faith exercise. And I have learned and have been learning that if I truly believe God has called me to something, then me saying no to an event, to an opportunity, for the sake of rest, for the sake of doing something that rejuvenates me, like going and taking my kids swimming, like going for a walk with my family, like just being home, hanging out with my wife and putting the kids to bed early. If I turn down an opportunity for the sake of those things, and I believe, even though it's an opportunity that I believe God has called me to do, it is a faith exercise in saying, God, I know there's another one. In the words of Bishop DJ Khaled,
another one,
right? something else is coming, because if I truly believe I've been called to it, right? Mm-hmm. If I know that I've been called to go minister the gospel through music, and I'm turning down this booking because I've been busy for the last 2 months straight, you know, just very busy in some capacity. And I say, oh man, it's a really good opportunity, but I can feel the tension between myself and my family. Not like anyone's mad or anything, but I know I haven't been around them in a while. It's a faith exercise for me to just, you know what? Thank you, but no thank you. I need to rest in this season. Man, that takes faith, right?
Yeah.
And it takes the same amount of faith that it took the disciples on Saturday. Mm-hmm. They walked with Jesus. They got to literally physically be in his presence. They had proximity and presence with Jesus, and he died on the cross. You don't think that the time in between his death and resurrection, that was a faith exercise, because he said, go to this place and wait for me. My gosh, that would have been so challenging. And I think for so many of us, we may be in this season where God asked us to lay something down, and you are now in the in-between. Look at Abraham, even had this whole moment. Okay, God, you've asked me to sacrifice my son. Well, God has maybe asked you to sacrifice your time. God has asked you to sacrifice your knowing. We have to have the faith and understanding God's way is different than ours, but he will resurrect in a way that may seem irrational, right? He told the disciples, I'm coming back.
Yeah.
They have no idea what that looked like. They had no idea what to expect, but they had to work their faith, right? Yeah. You see, even Thomas, the graciousness of our God is that he will even come to a person like Thomas, who even though he's standing in the flesh, even though he's resurrected, here, I'll do you one better. Go ahead, look at the hands, the holes in my hands and feet. Go, put your finger through there. Just see that this is real. And I think that's in a lot of ways, this resting in God, it can be a day, but it could also be a posture. And I would love to, I'll give you a moment here, Steve, if you want to add something. But in Hebrews 4, verse 9, it says that there remains then a Sabbath rest for the people of God. For anyone who enters God's rest also rests from their works, just as God did from his. Let us, therefore, make every effort to enter that rest so that no one will perish by following their example of disobedience. This rest is in God. We can experience it on this side of heaven, but the true and fullness of that rest is eternity with Jesus.
Yeah. Preach it, bro. As we wrap up, I think it would be really appropriate to reflect on Psalm 23, because this is a psalm that really paints a beautiful picture of what rest looks like.
Yeah.
And what I want to do is I'm going to read that and think about this against the backdrop of Revelation, actually, chapters 20 to 22. Mm-hmm. Because what you see in this Psalm 23, is what does rest look like? There's provision, there's rejuvenation, there's safety, there's vindication, and there is being with God.
Yeah.
All those things then get pulled together in Revelation chapters 20 to 22. So let me just read Psalm 23 here. The Lord is my shepherd, I shall not want. He makes me lie down in green pastures. He leads me beside still waters. He restores my soul. He leads me in paths of righteousness for his name's sake. There's a picture of provision and rejuvenation.
Mm-hmm.
Even though I walk through the valley of the shadow of death, I will fear no evil, for you are with me. Your rod and your staff, they comfort me. Safety.
Mm-hmm.
You prepare a table before me in the presence of my enemies. You anoint my head with oil. My cup overflows. Vindication before your enemies. Surely goodness and mercy shall follow me all the days of my life, and I shall dwell in the house of the Lord forever.
Amen.
Being with God. And that, to me, it paints a picture of, it gets fulfilled in Revelation 20 to 22, where Satan and death itself actually get destroyed.
Yeah.
There's vindication. That's what the saints have been praying for. We're vindicated.
Yeah.
Chapter 21, there's no more death, crying, or pain. There's safety. And the dwelling place of God is with humans, and humans, right, are with God, right? They will be his people and he will be their God. We're reunited. And then chapter 22, you see the tree of life.
Mm-hmm.
Rejuvenation, right? And fruit trees on either side of the river that yields its fruit in its season. There's provision, So all of that gets pulled together to show you a picture of what that peace, that shalom, is supposed to be.
Shalom.
And in that, against that backdrop, against that context, we can rest in God, knowing that that rest that I take in the Lord today is a microcosm of what is unfolding in our history and where it's all headed.
Amen. Selah.
Selah.
Pause and reflect. Thank you so much for listening to this week's podcast. As we are, at the time of this recording, about to celebrate Good Friday and Easter, from all of us at AC, it is a Good Friday because the life, death, and resurrection of Jesus means that we can ultimately enter that rest, that a day is coming, but there is also a day here where we can experience the rest of God. And so our prayer for you, as we reflect on this Holy Week, but just in general, that you would pursue the rest in God. Cease from your striving. You cannot outperform God. Faith without works is dead, but at the recognition of who Jesus is, you'll also be aware that he's not going to love you more or less depending on what you do for him. He already did that. We get to stand in the unfolding of a finished work on the cross. And so, thank you so much for listening to the AC podcast. Make sure to like and subscribe on all of your favorite streaming platforms. And as always, love God, love people. Bye for now. It's the AC podcast.